Nonsense, I say in my business-like tone. Elemental arts are like that, too. We're super regulated. We have to be registered, and then the leagues have all these crazy rules, too, about our powers. So that's what you meant when you said I was free to wish, right? Because I wasn't in the registry, right?
Exactly.
Plus, we all have different districts we work in, like jurisdictions. But some granters just work for the union, so they're not underground. And they don't really deal with wishers. They just enforce the rules. The career granters love rules. They are crazy about rules. They love setting them up and administering them.
Is that something a granter aspires to? Working in the union? Is that like a move up, being a career granter?
I guess. In the union, or as a career granter working in administration, you get to live all the time.
He says it in such a matter-of-fact tone, but the words are another punch in the gut. Live all the time. You have a jurisdiction. What's yours? All of New York City?
I'm Manhattan.
Manhattan, I say, trying on the word in a new way, as if it's his name.
That's why we're required to record all wishes in the registry. So if someone went to a granter in another country or state or wherever, they'd know, and they could turn them down free and clear.
Has that happened to you? Has someone summoned you and you found out they had a past, I say, sketching air quotes, of wishing?
Absolutely.
He nods his head in a resolute way.
We're like a drug to some people. One wish is never enough, so they try for more. Or they try to undo the wish, or undo the payment.
So when do you collect on these payments?
Some I've collected on already. Some are coming due soon. It varies. The length of the loan, that is.
I breathe out hard, and something clicks. Right. Because that's what a wish is. A loan, right? You always have to pay up somehow?
Yes, you do. There is always some sort of price. Even with a jackass granter, the wisher pays literally in the way the wish is made. As for all the others, only a few very savvy wishers have found their way around the payment.
Like with the snow gator?
He shakes his head. I can't tell you, Aria. Granter wisher privilege.
Right, but a snow gator? Come on. That's the legend around him. Won in some sort of bet for knowledge. Did she get to keep him after proving she wouldn't abuse the arts or the knowledge or something?
Another shake of the head.
You won't get this one out of me, he says.
But where else would a snow gator come from? He has to be from a wish. Or a payment.
So some payments are delayed, and some wishers pay off their debt. But do all wishers have to pay up?
Oh, they all have to pay. But every deal is different. Different conditions, provisos, quid pro quos.
A deal with the devil, I say.
Some say that.
So what would I pay with?
I don't know. What would you be willing to give up?
I have so little to trade. And the thing that makes me valuable, my firepower, is the thing I have to wish for. I can't bargain with my gifts. Do I offer my soul, my heart, my life, myself, my family? None of those sound vaguely appealing. I picture the TV screen from this morning, the Chicago boy being hauled away. I think of my mom in her chair, my sister's frozen hands, my dangerous brother, and my father.
I wish I could trade him, but he's faulty and flawed, and no one would want him.
I press my palm against my forehead. This makes my head hurt, I say softly.
Mine too.
I take a step closer, then lean my head against his chest. I hate these stupid consequences. I hate the way everything has a dark side. I hate my own dark side, how it lashed me today. most of all. I hate that I wanted to feel every dark thing, to do every dark thing. I don't feel that way now, though. I feel safe, and it's so foreign but so welcome. I don't want to think about payment right now, I say into his shirt. He strokes my hair. So don't, at least for tonight. Do you want to lie down and look at the stars instead? Yes. Chapter 23, Starlight. Taj lies down on the rooftop and I join him. He clasps his hands behind his head. He is lithe and beautiful, witty and trapped. For this moment, though, he is free as he gazes at the endless night sky. He reaches for my hand and laces his fingers through mine. Butterflies race through me with the slightest touch. I like this. I run my free hand through his soft hair. How did you become a Granter? You said you've been one since you were almost 16. That's not long. He doesn't answer right away. I wonder what's going through his head, or if he's just drinking in the stars and the sky, soaking in the nighttime, the outdoors, the things he rarely sees. Then he turns to me, shifts onto his side. I was payment. My skin prickles at his words. Payment? In what way? I was traded. I was the debt. And it came due. How do you mean? I haven't told this to anyone before, Arya. No one has ever asked. His voice is low, pinched with nerves. It's okay. You can tell me, I say, doing my best to sound brave, as if I can handle whatever he's going to say. You've heard rumors about peace in the ME? Well, they're true. It is peaceful there. Right. But I mean how it came to be peaceful. Do you know what they say? What people say about it? All I know is they say it had something to do with Granters, but no one really knows. Well, I know how it happened, he says, punctuating each word like their thumbtacks. It came about through the leaders of each country. They made a pact with Granters. The leaders worked together, and they found nearly a dozen Granters, and they made a wish. A wish so big it had never been wished before. A wish so big, so expansive, the Granters weren't sure if they could deliver on it. So the Granter Union and the Granters, too, set terms. And a time frame. Like a loan. To see if they could do it. To see if they could bring peace to a war-torn land. And the leaders made their offerings. They offered their children in exchange. I am cold all over. My charred heart turns to ice. They offered their children? That was the payment. That was the deal. That in 10 years, if peace still reigned, if the Granters had delivered on the wish, delivered peace, then the Granters would be freed. In their place, the firstborn children of the leaders would become the next generation of Granters. Your parents traded you for peace? I ask, as if saying the question can make it not so, as if expressing my own incredulity can turn this conversation into something that makes logical sense. Yes. Both of them. Both of them did? Well, it was my father's idea, he says. My father is in charge of one of the countries in the ME. Your dad is in charge of a whole country? If we weren't high up on a rooftop, all of Manhattan might have just heard me. They might have heard me anyway. Yes. And your mom went along with it. That's sort of how it goes when your dad runs the country. That's like my house, too. My dad is in charge of everything. But, I say, shaking my head, getting away from my lame little family in a run-down Florida ranch home. Do you talk to your parents? Can you ever see them? I talked to my mom the other night. Do you just talk on the phone or something? He laughs.
Yes, on the phone. I'm allowed to call her once a month when I'm free.
Do you ever talk to your dad?
He shakes his head. No. Can't say I care to.
I take it you're not too fond of him.
I understand why he did it. I do. I really do. Taj says emphatically, as if reminding himself that he's cool with his dad's sacrifice. But I understand it on a big picture level. Like, yeah, peace. Peace is good. We all want it. We'd all wish for it. But the price, I don't know. I suppose it could be worse. I'm just a grantor. I'm not dead.
I think that's a terrible thing to do to a child, I say, as if I'm the authority on this matter. Then I back down. I'm sorry. I shouldn't diss your family.
It's okay. Like I said, sometimes I understand it, and sometimes I hate it. And sometimes I wish I could just tell the story and it would be so entertaining and so compelling that it would free me.
We'll write you a new story, and somehow the story will free you, I say, even though I know we can't. I'm sorry about your parents, Taj, and I'm sorry about what happened.
Thanks. It'd be nice just to be normal, wouldn't it?
Totally. Sometimes I just want to be a normal kid. Try to get a normal job, make pizzas, or be a barista. Not this. I don't want fire.
If you wanted to be free, you could wish your powers gone.
Ha! That'd cause me even more problems.
But you could. You could wish to be normal.
Would you? Wish to be normal if you could?
What I would wish for is irrelevant.
Why? We're just talking.
It just is.
But I want to know, I say, pressing the issue as the stars flicker in the sky. Tell me what you'd wish for, Taj. You'd wish to be free, wouldn't you?
This isn't some movie where you get 3 wishes and you use the last one to free me. Wishers don't use their wishes on me, even though wishing a grantor free is the only wish that requires no payment from the wisher. And so, the only thing that can break me out is the only thing that will never happen.
Why? He waits before speaking, touches my face, tracing the edge of my hair.
Besides a wish, it's love, he says, by way of an answer.
Love? I ask, and I'm warm again, craving nearness to him when he talks about love.
Yet another proviso of grantorhood.
The only other way you can be freed is if someone falls in love with you. Who would make that rule? I get the whole wish you free thing, but how would a rule come to be about love?
Because love makes its own rules, he says in an offhand way.
What do you mean?
Because love can often transcend rules, and that's why the Grantor Union made a rule. There was a time many years ago when wishers were falling into infatuation with grantors, and that freed the grantor. Poof!
He holds his hands out as if he were a magician who made a dove disappear.
Because love was powerful in its own right, and the union needed to control that power the only way it could, by attaching a rule to it. The union couldn't stop love from freeing grantors, but they could ensure that only true love did, and that grantors weren't slipping out of the system through unregulated infatuations that would then fade quickly away. Now the only kind of love that can free a grantor is the kind of crazy, in love with your whole heart kind of thing. It erases any payment due from the wisher, and it frees the grantor right then, right there, on the spot. But as you can imagine, that hasn't happened. Infatuation, yes. Lust, yes. Crushes, absolutely. But true and real love?
He shakes his head.
Wishers don't have the time or inclination to fall into a deep and abiding love. Besides, how would I know when it happens? I've never been in love.
I've never been in love either, I whisper. Then I kiss him, and as we recline high above New York City, hanging out on a rooftop, I picture using my wish on him. I have that power. I could set him free. But then, I'd have a whole new set of problems to deal with.
Chapter 24. A Gust of Wind. I am bleary-eyed as I stumble into practice the next day. I have my sunglasses on and coffee in my hand, and I'm starting to get used to the beverage and the need for it. We have another show tonight, but our practice is only a few hours today. I didn't sleep much last night. I stared at the ceiling, making checklists of pros and cons of various wishes. I could wish for true fire, and then never have to pierce my heart again. That would be the fastest and safest way to ensure I could protect my family. Or I could wish Taj free and save someone who's been enslaved. If I did that, though, could I find a different way to save my sister? What if I ran away from the leagues and sneaked Janna out in the middle of the night, then trekked with her cross-country, far away from anyone who could hurt her? But I don't have the money yet. That's the problem. We run through our morning drills, the standard stretches and sprints. Then we break out into our packs, air artists in one spot, wind artists in another. I move with the fire artists, and we run through our tailored drills, the fireballs, the plumes of flames, the arc of fireworks high overhead. We all peel off these moves as if they're second nature, because they are. But at the tail end of practice, a fireball skitters away from me. Mateus grunts, tells me to pay more attention. I nod, like it's just a gaffe. Then my chest tightens hard, like a fist gripping my heart. Another sign that the unwinding is near. Soon I'm going to spit up all my sputtering fire, only this time it's taken me less than 2 months to come undone, and this time the consequences are far worse. I manage to fake my way through my fear, like I faked my way through most of my life. I make it through the final 10 minutes without flubbing any more moves, and it's enough to give me a speck of hope that I can pull off tonight's show without any problems. Jem and I are about to leave and grab something to eat when Reyna appears in the locker room, her sculpted arms on display in a sleeveless silk top. I imagine inking her bicep with a cartoon cat stretching its back luxuriously. But the cat's tongue will stick out. It will have forgotten to pull its sandpaper tongue back into its mouth. Reyna says nothing, just walks close to us. Her nose twitches when she passes me. It's as if she's smelling me. "Let's go get those sandwiches," I say to Jem. After we eat, I opt for a salad instead of a sandwich, back to my good girl ways. Jem stretches out her leg across mine. She's wearing shorts, and she points to her muscular thigh. "Now." I take a pen from my backpack, lean over, and begin drawing a "Don't mess with me" daisy. This daisy scowls. This daisy would wear a leather jacket and light matches on the bottom of her boots. This daisy would toss her desk over in one fell swoop to knock out a bully. As I color in the petals, Jem presses for details of my date. "We kissed," I say, grateful to tell her. And then I'm suddenly sharing all details, and I sound like a schoolgirl, not a badass daisy, and definitely not like the fire thief who, on her last night in Wonder, made out with a guy whose name she didn't know. "What's his name?"
"Taj."
"Cool name," she says. "Where's he from? It's kind of unusual."
"Not here," I tease.
"Obviously. But where?" I mention Taj's home country. "His family is from there, but they've been here for a while." A white lie, but it's close enough.
"So does he go to school?"
School. Such a foreign thought. But those of us who haven't graduated yet, like me, will be tutored come fall and go to school a few hours a day. Thinking about the fall reminds me of other things about the fall. Like where Taj will be, where I'll be,
What will happen to him if I wish for myself? What will happen to Janna if I wish him free? Because I'm going to have to make my wish soon enough. Sooner than I want.
Hi. It's starting again. I can't wait till August. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I would swim to New York right now if I could. XOXO, Elise. At the show tonight, I ignite several magnificently tall flames that reach for the sky, that dare to stretch to the stars. I unfurl a series of successively larger canopies of fire that rain over my head, causing gasps and cheers among the thousands here. Then I unveil my twin, my heart and lungs twitching with nerves. What if I lose control of her again? But she behaves, mimicking me as I craft two plumes that howl and hiss and coil around each other. Hers do the same. Then, the tip on one of my streaks of fire snaps off. No warning, no shudder in my heart to tip me off. Just a careening, crashing flame that turns into a very ordinary-looking fire when it hits the ground. I do what I always do. Improvise. I fall to my knees and coax the fire back to my hands. Even though I'm fading, I somehow find enough in the reserves to turn the flames back into an arc above me. Then I see my twin. She started to wander away from me, heading into the audience. Some stare at her in shock, bend away from her. I close my hands and kill my twin. They cheer, as if I meant to do that. I take a bow, and I see Imran is in the front row again, and he doesn't look as happy as he did last night. Jem and I walk to the dressing room in silence. Words are bottled up in my throat. I want to tell her how I feel, to admit that this insufferable fire is choking me from the inside out, that my fire is sick and twisted. But I don't have time to say that, because Imran is waiting for me. I can't read his expression, whether he's upset or concerned. His arms are crossed, and his honeyed voice is bare as he tells me,
"Aria, we need to talk."
Jem meets my eyes, tries to ask silently, "What's up, and are you okay?" But there's no way to answer, and no way to know. All I can think of is Reginald Kramer, the boy from Chicago who was made an example of by the leagues. Will they make an example of me, too? Or will they shoo me away, shut me up, a hush-hush case they won't want talked about? The thief who slipped into the system. Leaden and heavy, I follow Imran, a prisoner being escorted to her own trial. I have feared this moment for so long, and now it's here. I've ridden my chances to the edge, and now I have to pay.
"For starters, Reyna has told me you are clean, and I am pleased to hear that. I know someone with your abilities might have been tempted to use and to enhance them, especially seeing how powerful your creations are. And we've kept a close eye on you, given your family history."
The last few words are pointed and cutting. It seems unfair to my brother that they're eyeing me suspiciously because of him.
"But that's not why I called you in tonight. I'm afraid I have bad news."
I swallow, a nervous animal backed into a corner. But I steady myself, keeping my feet planted firm, my hands at my side, my head held high. Whatever he says, I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it like I know how to take bad news. I brace myself, ready to hear the words Reginald Kramer heard.
"It's about your brother."
All that steadiness rushes away. I feel blindfolded and turned around. What is he talking about? "What do you mean?" Imran continues.
"There were some new car bombings in Winter Springs. He was caught in the act."
My brother. My wild and careless brother. The brother I looked up to. The brother I loved. the brother who should have protected his two little sisters, but in the end couldn't even look out for himself. I picture visiting him in prison again, talking to him through bars. My eyes grow hot and prickly, tears forming behind them. I try to blink them back, but one tear slides down each cheek. I will miss him like crazy. I have always missed him.
Ordinarily, I'd give you some time off. I'd even arrange for a flight and let you spend a few days with your parents. But I really think it's best for you if you stay here and focus.
Imran doesn't want me near my brother. He thinks my family is tainted, that they'll rub off on me, on the girl Prometheus. Sure, I say, just to say something.
I know it's hard,
he continues.
But we believe in you, Arya. And even in spite of your family history, given all the things that they've done, we want you to stay, and we know you can rise above.
Of course, I say through tight lips that want to quiver, through eyes that want to pour out tears. Soon he dismisses me, and I check my phone to see that Xavi called, and there's a message too telling me he's sorry, and he hopes I'll come visit him in prison. My mother answers. I imagine her expelling a withering oomph as she reaches for the phone, a plaintive sort of moan to underscore the gigantic effort of making a movement.
Hello.
Her voice is wavering. I suppose learning your eldest child is going back to prison for the rest of his life would be a little unnerving. Hey, Mom, it's me. I just wanted to check in on you. I heard the news. She gulps, and I hear tadpole tears in her throat. I'm sorry, Mom. I'm sitting on a stoop, on the steps outside someone's Upper West Side apartment building. The stoop is dark brown, and the paint is cracked. The windows on the first floor have green shutters and are dirty.
Oh.
That's the only sound she makes. A sad and defeated, oh, that loses steam.
Are you sad?
It's an obvious question. Of course she is sad. But in my family, we have to ask the obvious question if we even want to circle the answer. We talk about Xavier some more, and she cries deeper tears this time. Big, sobby ones that swim upstream through rivers and fling themselves on shores. I tell her it's okay, that she can cry with me, because I have a feeling she doesn't cry in front of my father.
I wish I could be there right now. Do you want me to come visit? I can see if I can get away for a weekend or something, I say, even though I know I can't. Of course I do, sweetie. But your father's gone for his fishing trip, and I'm sure you'd want to visit when he's in town.
I snort. Hardly. This actually sounds like the perfect time for a visit. If only I could get away. How long is he gone?
For about a week.
Does he even know about Xavi?
Yes.
And he went away anyway?
Well, there's nothing he can do about it, honey.
Except maybe be there for his son, but that'd be too much to ask, I say, kicking the ground with my boot, wishing it were my father.
Oh, darling, don't say that about your father. He loves Xavi.
Yeah, well, I say, and suck in a breath. Are you sure you don't need me? How are you managing on your own?
You need to focus on your job now. Don't worry about me. Never worry about me.
I always worry about you, Mom. She is small and shapeless, a tiny stain in her papasan chair.
Hush, that's silly.
How's Jana?
Oh, you know,
she says, as if that constitutes an answer. No, I don't know. How is she? Her birthday is coming up soon, Mom. Her 13th birthday.
We're going to know soon if she's something.
Yes, in a week. Her birthday is in a week,
she says, stating the obvious, avoiding the implications. That's her answer?
Mom, how is she doing? Do you even see her? Is she staying with Mindy a lot like she's supposed to?
She must be shifting in her chair, squirming. Tough topics make her uncomfortable, and in this moment, I want to lash out at her. She never used to be like this. She always used to talk, to answer, to teach. She taught me to read, to ride a bike, to look both ways when crossing the street. She used to be somebody. She used to be strong. Now she says nothing, does nothing. I want to tell her that right now she's as culpable as my father.
Mom, I push. Tell me what's going on.
She's hardly around, Aria, my mother says, snapping at me, backed into a corner by my insistence.
Is she staying with Mindy? I ask again. Please say that's where she is. Please, please.
I don't know how much more I can hate myself for leaving her there. But if I have to, I can surely hunt down more self-loathing. Because this is all my fault.
She's always at the pool or the beach. And when she comes home, she won't talk. She goes to her room and slams the door. So there. I have failed her, too. She won't talk to me. She won't tell me a thing. My son is in prison. My youngest won't speak to me. And you're the only one who cares.
A tsunami of tears comes next. Waves of self-loathing from my mother. Her admission, out of the blue, that she has failed. I make some soothing sounds. Tell her it'll be okay. But it won't be okay. She can't fix my sister. She couldn't help Xavi. And she can't stop my father. Then my mother surprises me with what she says next.
Jana was leaving for the beach yesterday, and I tried to talk to her. I tried to ask her how she was doing. I even got up. I made it to the door, but Aria, I opened the door.
You opened the door? I haven't seen her near the door in years.
Yes, but I couldn't make it past the door. I tried to step outside, but it was as if there was a gust of wind that blew me back inside.
A gust of wind? Maybe she's going crazy.
And then I just felt as if everything had gone dark and black, and I fell down. And when I came to, I dragged myself back to my chair.
What kind of gust of wind would knock her out? Chapter 25, Cooling Effect. As my boots pound the sidewalk on the way to a grade on 66th Street, I have to fight this flickering inside me. It's like I have a nervous tic the way my shoulders seize up, but it's because my chest is an accordion, pinching and stretching all the organs inside it. I've never been around so many people when I'm in this state, all raw and exposed. A human body painted on a poster in science class, with insides shown and labeled. And this class is the dangerous part, the teacher would say, her pointer aimed at my drawn and quartered heart. I keep my head down, my hands laced behind my back, my fingers twisted around each other so I don't unleash any flames. I want to sneer and bark at anyone who walks past me, to shout at them to get away, to ask why they're out at this hour. But it's New York. It's not Wonder Florida, where I can wander around in the wee hours without being seen. Besides, it's my newfound darkness that makes me feel so mean. As I round the corner and turn toward Lincoln Center, to the grate Taj and I picked to meet at, I breathe out this coiled tension. But it has nowhere to go, so it filters back into me. I reach the grate and call out to Taj. He appears right away. I picture him racing through the tunnels, a rock being slung out of a slingshot, called forth by his wisher. He pops up the grate and asks if he can come up. "Of course," I say, but I don't smile, because I think it's awful that he can't emerge without my permission. Then he's beside me. "Hi." "Hi," I say, and feel a little less awful. There's an awkward moment, as if neither one of us knows what's next and whether we're allowed to repeat last night, or whether we return to the way it was before. Then he moves first, leaning into my lips. I close my eyes, and his soft lips are on mine. With each second that ticks by, I can feel my chest loosening, a knot unwinding. My body doesn't feel torqued, and I realize it's because of him. He leans his forehead against mine and asks the simplest of questions. "How was your day?" It melts me that he wants to know, and it melts me again that I want to tell him how absolutely awful it was. "Crummy," I say, stepping back and resting against the concrete wall that hems in Lincoln Center behind us. We're ensconced in a quiet little nook off the street, a semi-private corner that makes me feel as if we're alone. "Yours?"
"It was good. I read a book."
"What book?" "Wait, let me guess. Something fancy," I tease. "Moby Dick? Ulysses?"
"Mock my taste, why don't you?"
"I just did."
"I read a thriller. Espionage and government secrets and stolen identities across Europe. See, I have a wide range of tastes."
He pauses, then the teasing recedes from both of us as he touches my cheek. I take his hand and put it on my chest. His palm is warm against my skin, and his touch shoots sparks through me. He raises an eyebrow. "Do you remember when you first put your hand on my chest?"
"Of course."
"I liked it a lot," I say, and I know it comes out shy-sounding, and it's not because I'm a shy girl. It's because I've never let myself be vulnerable.
"Me too."
I place my hand over his, closer to me, covering my heart. "But it's more than just that when you touch me. Because a few minutes ago, all I wanted was to set the world on fire, and my chest hurt, like my bones were being squeezed. But when I'm near you, I don't feel that way at all." I always thought I'd squirm if I ever told a guy I liked him, if I ever truly opened up to someone. But maybe that's because every boy I've ever known has been too much hometown, and home is what I've always wanted to leave. "When I'm with you, I feel free," I whisper. And now I am vulnerable. Now I have let down my guard. Instinct tells me to flee, but I resist.
"I feel that way too, Arya.
When I'm with you,
I feel free too."
The words are heavy because, of course, he's not free. He can't be free unless I set him free. And here I am again, circling the same problem, arriving at the same answer. There are no more nights of waiting one more night to wish. I have to wish tonight. The prospect of losing him pierces me.
"Hey,"
he starts, shifting the conversation in another direction.
"Why was your day so crummy?"
He takes my hand and we walk around the front of Lincoln Center. I feel unmoored again, now that we're not kissing or touching. I have the faintest desire to flick my fingers, to unleash a few sparks, and I know the contact with him has only cooled me momentarily. I am a steaming tea kettle that was taken off the burner for a minute, but now it's been replaced, and the dial has been turned back up. Reprieve doesn't last for long. We reach the front of Lincoln Center and sit on the marble steps. I tell him about my day, about my brother, about the call with my mom, about what I think is going on with Janna. Taj stops me when I mention what happened with my mom,
how she tried to open the door but couldn't.
What did she say happened?
She said it was like a gust of wind. Everything went black and dark.
Like she couldn't leave the house?
His throat sounds constricted as he asks.
That's what she said.
Arya, you told me before that she never leaves, right? That you haven't seen her out of the house in years?
Right.
And now she said she was almost physically stopped by some sort of force before she left?
He asks carefully, taking his time with each word, as if each one is a clue being assembled into a proper order.
Yes? Why? What is it?
Arya,
he whispers.
Is your father's name Felix?
Felix. I never use his name. I try to never think of his name. It humanizes him. Hearing someone else speak, it feels out of joint, a hinge being hung on the wrong size door.
Yes? Why?
I have to show you something.
What? What do you have to show me? I've had far too many surprises today. I don't want another one, especially one that has to do with my father.
Trust me, please. Can you come with me? To my library?
Underground we go. Chapter 26. Stupid Wishes. The tunnels are the kind of dark where you can't see the outline of your fingers, where you can't tell if the floor is beneath your feet. We crunch along through the tunnel, its floor formed by hard-packed dirt and dankness, by naked walls under city streets. His hand holds mine so tightly, they might as well be fused together. Or maybe it's because I'm gripping his fingers so hard, forging them into mine. We turn a sharp corner and I stumble, separating from Taj. I fall on one knee, shooting out a hand to brace myself. As I connect with the floor, I release a small plume. The fire lights up the tunnel, and Taj jumps back, pressing himself against the wall.
Arya, it's okay.
He's trying to calm me, but I can tell he's scared too, of what I might do. Truth is, so am I, because I didn't mean to do that. It just happened. I yank the flames back into my hand, consuming them in my body, without any grace or art, just a sheer, blunt tug. I stand. Sorry, I mutter.
We're almost there, he says.
But I suspect what he means to say is, get a grip on your fire, girl. But I can't. Right now, the fire is becoming stronger than I am, eating me from the inside. I've never been away from Elise on nights like this when I start to lose my fire. I clench my fist and picture my heart in a vice, immovable metal holding its convulsing center in place. The heart can't escape. The heart is held. The heart is calm. We reach the door, and Taj opens it, and I practically spill into his home, his library. I grab him, pull him against me, wrap my arms around his strong frame. He senses what I need right now isn't kissing, though I wouldn't complain if his lips were on mine. What I need is the pressure of his body against mine. Somehow it settles the fire in me. After a few minutes, my chest isn't sputtering. I can manage for a bit. What did you want to show me?
It's the book, the Registry of Wishes.
My jaw drops. But you said you can't reveal wishes.
I know.
He scrubs a hand across his jaw as if this pains him.
This is completely forbidden. I shouldn't be doing this at all, but you need to see this.
He nods to his desk. The thriller he was reading is off to the side. He pulls open a heavy drawer and takes out a large red book. It's fat and tall, the size of a giant dictionary.
I'm told this used to be about the weight of a flimsy magazine. But over the years, over the centuries, as more wishes get made,
The book gets bigger.
They're all in here?
He nods, then opens the book, spreading its heavy pages apart at his desk.
With each wish, names are added,
he explains. But this is just one book. How do they get in every grantor's book?
Whenever a name is added in one book, it appears, like magic ink, moments later in another's. That's how the registry works, almost like a shared document that we all have access to. Any update in one book is reflected in the others.
How many names do you think are in this?
A lot.
The book looks like a ledger, with ruler-marked lines and names in dark script. Payment is listed in one column, then whether the account is due, past due, or paid in full, he tells me. And I suspect the lady must be in here somewhere and listed as paid in full. As Taj flips the pages past the H's, the I's, the J's, everything comes into focus. I stiffen when he lands on the K's and begins running his index finger down the names.
They don't always get recorded properly by jackass grantors,
Taj says, speaking matter-of-factly, as if he's a doctor explaining a simple procedure.
Well, that's not entirely true. They always get recorded, because we have no choice in that. You are compelled to record every wish precisely as it's wished, and it's too powerful a force to resist. But sometimes the jackass grantors don't always have the best handwriting.
He turns several more pages, passing the names starting with K.A., then K.E., then a few K.H. names in the book. As we come closer to my last name, the pages start swimming, letters levitating and curving toward me. I press my fingers against the bridge of my nose to focus as Taj's index finger lands on a name, scratched out in poor penmanship, like a kindergartner eking out words for the first time. Felix, Kilan. That's as far as the grantor got. The last four letters that form our name, Kalandros, are just one long, scratchy line. But it's him. It has to be him. I follow the line, squeezed in between so many other wishes, straining to keep my eyes on the right wish, the right payment. Then I see it. I wish for my wife to never leave me as long as we both shall live. Oh my God, I say, and I repeat it over and over as I press my hand to my eyes again, as if I can shoo the wish away and the record of it. But I can't, so I force myself to look again, this time to the payment column. Paid in full upon transaction, literally. That's how it's written, with an exclamation point, and I can picture this jackass grantor. I'm seeing a Rumpelstiltskin figure, clicking his heels with glee, a tiny little figure, cackling as he entered this wish in the registry. My father got what he wished for, all right. A wife fallen ill. A wife saddled with a mystery illness. A wife who literally and figuratively can't leave him because she can barely even leave her chair. They say be careful what you wish for. They say wishes come with a price. I always knew that in my head. Now I feel it in my heart. Wishes don't come in bottles. Grantors don't live in lamps. And you're not given three wishes by benevolent genies who nod their heads, wiggle their noses, and say, "Yes, master." I should be mad at the jackass grantor. I glance over at his name. Shaw. One name, that's it. But Shaw didn't make the wish. Shaw simply granted it, wholly intact, upon request, before my father could even offer payment. Because that's how jackass grantors work. And the wish come true was both wish and payment. I turn to Taj, anger flaring in my eyes, my body sharpened with a new form of hate for my father. How could he do this to her? That's why she's confined to her stupid chair and stupid house? Because of my stupid, selfish father?
It would seem that way.
So this is how a jackass grantor works, I say, taking deep, sharp breaths. Just like you told me when we first met. They work literally.
And the payment is often the wish itself.
Yes. Apparently the wish was carried out with a horrific sort of exactitude.
I shake my head several times, as if I could wish this all away. He made her this way. It's all his fault.
Taj says nothing. But an idea hits me in the silence. One more way to spend my wish. On my mom.
Can I wish her free? Can I use my wish to wish her free?
He nods.
You could. But unraveling another grantor's wish is complicated. If every wish came undone with another wish, then the fabric of wishing would be compromised. You have to be very precise in the wording if you're unraveling a wish. And wishes can only be undone with another wish by going before the grantor union to make your case.
I roll my eyes. Well, that pretty much screws me over. The leagues won't let me use a grantor, and even if I'm not using one for my powers, they'd probably kick me out anyway.
They probably would.
Then it hits me. The wording. It's all in the wording. I look back at my father's wish in the book, reading every awful word. I wish for my wife to never leave me as long as we both shall live. Maybe that's the loophole right there. Live. My mother will be free when my father is dead. I could kill him. I have the means. I have the weapons. I could burn him to a crisp. I open and close my hands as if I'm practicing, getting ready to light him up. Then I press my fingers into my palm. A reminder that I won't go there. I don't set people on fire, so I can't undo my father's awful work, his terrible wish gone awry. My heart clutches again, like it's gasping for breath. I ball my hands into tighter fists, as if I can contain my fire with sheer will. But the stretching and pulling in my chest becomes too much. I inhale sharply, and I let go of a messy jet of flames. Taj's eyes widen, but I grab the fire, letting it retreat into me. The relief is temporary. I'm a time bomb. The clock in me is ticking perilously close to some kind of destruction. Taj pulls me over to the couch and wraps his arms around me. I breathe in. I breathe out. I've been broiling in the sun, but it's as if I just dipped into cool blue waters for a moment. The calm before the storm. The quiet before the wish I have to make. I know he can't hold me forever, but I'm going to do my best to relish these last few moments before I do something I hate, before I become more like my father and make a wish that will hurt a person I love. My father has molded me in his image, and I've detested it, and him. But I am more like him than I thought. I feel Taj's hands on my face, brushing hair from my cheek, an amnesty for another moment. I like this, I whisper in a ragged voice, like I'm barely holding on.
So do I.
I like you, I continue, more roughness in my throat. I have to get these words out. I have to say this, even as my body rages against me.
I like you too, Arya.
There's more, though, I say. And now I'm scared in a new way, in a way I've never been afraid before. I'm going to put it out there. He pulls back so he can look at me. His eyes are clear and kind and full of everything I never knew I wanted, but everything it turns out I really need. I practice the words silently first. I'm in love with you. The strangest sensation fills me from head to toe. Lightness. I feel as if I could float, as if I weigh nothing. I'm not coiled or tense or looking behind my back. I'm happy, and I'm safe, and I've accomplished safety in the presence of another person, not a towering plume of flames that I made myself. I say the words again in my head, and I don't feel like I'm floating anymore. Because now I'm flying. Now I'm soaring. And though we're lying very still and quiet on the couch,
I'm higher than I was on the rooftop. Maybe this is how I'm different from my father. He wished out of fear. He has lived his life out of selfish fear. I'm not my father. I'm not my mother. I'm not my brother. I'm more than a thief. I'm more than an artist. I'm more than my lightning-struck heart. I'm myself. And maybe I can have the things I want and the things I need. I can save my sister. I can save myself. And I can save this marvelous boy, too. I sit upright. I'm ready. I'm ready to wish. He winces as if this pains him. Then he straightens up, too. He takes a small notebook from his pocket. He becomes businesslike, and I get it. We have to discuss the terms. Let's go above ground, I say, because I want air. I want space. I want room to revel in how much our lives are about to change for the better. We leave, and this time we take the short route, emerging near the Flatiron Building moments later. He walks me over to Madison Square Park across the street. It's after midnight. It's dark, and we're the only ones here. We stop near a park bench and stand next to it.
What are you going to wish for, Arya?
He asks in a mechanical voice, because he is all business now, and he has no choice. But this will be one of the last times he has to feel what it's like to be mastered. I'm going to wish for you to grant me natural-born fire. Fire that doesn't fade every few months. Fire that doesn't need lightning to replenish it. Fire that I can call on wherever and whenever I need it for the elemental arts. Fire as if I'd been born with it.
And how do you propose to pay?
I've thought long and hard about it. I don't have much to offer, but the fact is, it won't matter. I won't have to pay up, because he'll be free when my debt comes due. There will be no one to collect, so it'll be as if my loan has been wiped clean. But even so, to make this work for both of us, I'll have to wish first, because I need natural-born fire to stay afloat in my world. I need to bargain for it properly. If he knows my payment offer is as good as crocodile tears, I fear some grantor magic may prevent him from agreeing, may clamp down on him and keep him bound to grantor rules and regulations. So we'll have to determine terms first, as if we're really going through the whole wish and payment officially, even though I know the payment will be erased when I tell him how I feel. Love. It erases any payment due from the wisher, and it frees the grantor. Myself, I say, my voice bright and certain. I offer myself. I offer to trade places with you. He shakes his head.
That's crazy. You don't want to be me.
I reach out to touch his arm. Trust me, it'll be fine. You said that's how some people pay, with themselves. By taking the place of a grantor. That's all I have, myself. That's all I can offer. It has to be good enough. You said it could be. So I offer myself. I offer to trade places with you.
And when do you propose I collect?
You can collect on the payment in 1 week. That's it. 7 measly days is all. And you can collect, and I'll take your place as a grantor. He scoffs.
Are you insane? If you turn into a grantor in 1 week, why do you need...
You know they're fair terms, I say, cutting him off. You know they're more than fair. Taj, this will be fine. It'll all be fine. You have to trust me. Please tell me you trust me. Please tell me you know that I know what I'm doing. I pick 1 week because it won't matter. In a few minutes, I'll have fire, and he'll be free, and there will be no need to collect. The payment I'm making will be wiped clean. He presses his lips together, keeping his mouth closed. His jaw is set hard.
The terms are satisfactory, he says through gritted teeth, as he finishes recording them on his notepad, terms that will never be entered into the ledger for all grantors to see. Terms that will be erased when I tell him the next thing.
I'm practically bouncing, and I want to spill the secret. But I have to keep this wish on the up and up.
And now, your wish, officially.
He gives me a perfunctory little bow, doffing an imaginary hat in deference to his wisher, who happens to be in crazy love with him. I'm not sure which to say first, that I love him or what I wish. So I speak quickly, getting all the thoughts out in one big breath. I wish, as I stand before you, fully and wholly, in mad, crazy love with you, Taj, I say, and his eyes widen when they register what I've said. And we're in cahoots now. We're teammates. We've beaten the system, and he knows it. And he's smiling, and so am I as I finish.